University of Cambridge International Examinations. International General Certificate of Secondary Education. November Examination Session 2011. English as a Second Language. Extended Tier. Listening Comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the test. If you would like the recording to be louder or quieter, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the test. Teacher, please give out the question papers, and when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you are all ready, here is the test. Look at questions 1 to 6. For each question, you will hear the situation described as it is on your exam paper. You will hear each item twice. Questions 1 to 6. For questions 1 to 6, you will hear a series of short sentences. Answer each question on the line provided. Your answers should be as brief as possible. You will hear each item twice. Question 1. What refreshments must the home team supply?
There's a table tennis match on Tuesday. Can you and your brother play, please? Also, can you bring some juice and biscuits? We're playing at home, so we all need to supply refreshments for the visiting team. Ring me back if you need transport. 07779 87987. There's a table tennis match on Tuesday. Can you and your brother play, please? Also, can you bring some juice and biscuits? We're playing at home, so we all need to supply refreshments for the visiting team. Ring me back if you need transport. 07779 87987.
Question 2. What does the lost watch look like? Give two details.
Hello, is that the swimming pool reception desk? I was in your building about 2 hours ago. I've lost my watch and wonder if I left it there.
No, I'm sorry. No watch has been handed in as lost property today. Give me a description of it.
It's gold and has a black strap. Hello, is that the swimming pool reception desk? I was in your building about 2 hours ago. I've lost my watch and wonder if I left it there.
No, I'm sorry. No watch has been handed in as lost property today. Give me a description of it.
It's gold and has a black strap.
Question 3. How would the teacher prefer to receive Jaleel's essay and why?
Jaleel, where is your essay, please?
Oh dear, it's still on my desk at home. I can email it to you tonight, or I can bring it in tomorrow for you to mark.
No, email it to me, please, so I can mark it tonight. Oh, and don't forget to bring your textbook to the lesson tomorrow. Jaleel, where is your essay, please?
Oh dear, it's still on my desk at home. I can email it to you tonight, or I can bring it in tomorrow for you to mark.
No, email it to me, please, so I can mark it tonight. Oh, and don't forget to bring your textbook to the lesson tomorrow.
Question 4. What is Mum's advice? Give 2 details.
Mum, I'm going to be late for tea. The car's broken down. We're waiting for the repair truck to come and help us.
Oh, dear. Do wear something bright. Stay near the car and keep your phone on. It's getting dark.
Don't worry, I know. Here's the repair van now. I can see the flashing yellow light on top. Mum, I'm going to be late for tea. The car's broken down. We're waiting for the repair truck to come and help us.
Oh, dear. Do wear something bright. Stay near the car and keep your phone on. It's getting dark.
Don't worry, I know. Here's the repair van now. I can see the flashing yellow light on top.
Question 5. Which special deal do the friends plan to use at the sales?
Let's go to the sales in the shopping mall at the weekend. There'll be bargains and I need something to wear for the end of term party.
I've got a voucher too for an extra 10% off the sale price. We can use that.
Let's go to the sales in the shopping mall at the weekend. There'll be bargains and I need something to wear for the end of term party.
I've got a voucher too for an extra 10% off the sale price. We can use that.
Question 6. What is the meal offer and why can't Finn go this time?
Finn, we're organising a meal for the whole class at that new restaurant opposite the sports club. Their opening offer is buy one meal, get one free.
Oh, that would be lovely. But I'm saving up for something special for my dad's birthday. Sorry, but I'd love to come next time you go there.
Finn, we're organising a meal for the whole class at that new restaurant opposite the sports club. Their opening offer is buy one meal, get one free.
Oh, that would be lovely. But I'm saving up for something special for my dad's birthday. Sorry, but I'd love to come next time you go there.
That is the last of questions 1 to 6. In a moment, you will hear question 7. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 7. Listen to the following interview with an island caretaker and then complete the details below. You will hear the interview twice.
Hello and welcome to our career profile. Today we are talking to Ben Southall, a man who has the best job in the world. Ben, what exactly is your job?
I look after islands. I'm an island caretaker.
Don't islands look after themselves?
Yes, but my job is to look after the Great Barrier Reef Islands off Queensland, Australia, with the purpose of promoting them and their wildlife to the world by writing a fortnightly report in the form of a blog.
I don't think I've ever heard of those islands.
Well, now at least you know where they are.
Were there many applications for your job?
About 34,000 people from all over the world applied for it.
Oh, I see. What qualifications did you need in order to be selected?
The employers were looking for a good all-rounder. That means someone who is good at sports, good with people, has a relevant academic interest and background, and has a sense of adventure and energy.
Did you just send in your curriculum vitae?
Yes.
but each applicant also had to submit a 60-second video demonstrating his or her creativity and specific skills. I applied in January 2009 and 50 people were shortlisted for interview. 16 of us were eventually sent to Queensland for the final selection process in May 2009.
So you had an interview on your islands?
Yes, the interviews took place on the Whitsunday Islands and all of us had to swim, snorkel, sail and dive and even to cook and taste local cuisine.
Hmm, eat local food. Why would that be part of the interview? Oh, did you have to eat bugs and other insects?
Yes. It was all televised, you know. Anyway, I got the job and now I am spending 6 months exploring, promoting and writing blogs about the islands. A wetsuit and flippers have become my new work uniform.
What was your previous job?
Which one? I'm 34, so I've had a few jobs already. Most recently, I was a fundraiser. However, I studied marine biology at university.
Well, good luck with the island caretaker job. We can all follow your explorations, can't we?
Yes. I'm going to immerse myself in the life of these islands, both on land and under the water. I already love to hear the cockatoos squawking in the pine trees and to spot humpback whales in the sea. Keep checking my island caretaker blog for details and watch my progress on YouTube as I explore the Great Barrier Reef Islands.
And what plans do you have for the future?
I'm hoping to write a book and present a television documentary about the Barrier Reef Islands.
Good luck!
Now you will hear the interview again.
Hello and welcome to our career profile. Today we are talking to Ben Southall, a man who has the best job in the world. Ben, what exactly is your job?
I look after islands. I'm an island caretaker.
Don't islands look after themselves?
Yes, but my job is to look after the Great Barrier Reef Islands off Queensland, Australia, with the purpose of promoting them and their wildlife to the world by writing a fortnightly report in the form of a blog.
I don't think I've ever heard of those islands.
Well, now at least you know where they are.
Were there many applications for your job?
About 34,000 people from all over the world applied for it.
Oh, I see. What qualifications did you need in order to be selected?
The employers were looking for a good all-rounder. That means someone who is good at sports, good with people, has a relevant academic interest and background, and has a sense of adventure and energy.
Did you just send in your curriculum vitae?
Yes, but each applicant also had to submit a 60-second video demonstrating his or her creativity and specific skills. I applied in January 2009 and 50 people were shortlisted for interview. 16 of us were eventually sent to Queensland for the final selection process in May 2009.
So you had an interview on your islands?
Yes, the interviews took place on the Whitsunday Islands and all of us had to swim, snorkel, sail and dive and even to cook and taste local cuisine.
Hmm, eat local food. Why would that be part of the interview? Oh, did you have to eat bugs and other insects?
Yes. It was all televised, you know. Anyway, I got the job and now I am spending 6 months exploring, promoting and writing blogs about the islands. A wetsuit and flippers have become my new work uniform.
What was your previous job?
Which one? I'm 34, so I've had a few jobs already. Most recently, I was a fundraiser. However, I studied marine biology at university.
Well, good luck with the island caretaker job. We can all follow your explorations, can't we?
Yes. I'm going to immerse myself in the life of these islands, both on land and under the water. I already love to hear the cockatoos squawking in the pine trees and to spot humpback whales in the sea. Keep checking my Island Caretaker blog for details and watch my progress on YouTube as I explore the Great Barrier Reef Islands.
And what plans do you have for the future?
I'm hoping to write a book and present a television documentary about the Barrier Reef Islands.
Good luck!
That is the end of question 7. In a moment, you will hear question 8. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 8. Listen to the following interview about a Grand Prix car race and then complete the following details. You will hear the interview twice.
Hello and welcome to Sports Weekly from Abu Dhabi. Today we're going to look at Formula One motor racing and its profile here in the Middle East. Driver Jai Prasad is here to talk to us. Jai, when did motor racing in Abu Dhabi start?
The first ever Grand Prix in Abu Dhabi took place on Sunday the 1st of November 2009.
Formula One fans and even the drivers themselves had been waiting for this race for a long time, hadn't they?
Yes. The Abu Dhabi Grand Prix was timetabled as the last race of the season, and thousands of fans flocked here to the track to watch the race live. At the same time, millions and millions of people watched us on TV and the internet all round the world.
What wonderful publicity for your country.
Suddenly, everyone knew about the United Arab Emirates and Abu Dhabi itself. It certainly raised our profile.
Does your track go through the streets like in Monte Carlo in Singapore?
No, the track is purpose-built. The whole track is 5.55 kilometres long. 50,000 spectators can be seated in grandstands along its course. All seats are covered against the weather. That's unique for Grand Prix spectator seating.
Can you talk us through a quick tour of the track, please?
Certainly. The main entrance brings visitors directly into the heart of the circuit at the main grandstand, which can seat 7,000. Opposite is the pit building, an area at the side of the track where racing cars are serviced and refuelled. There are 40 garages here for the racing teams and their officials. The team buildings and the medical centre are close by too.
What about television coverage?
The media centre is the next building along the track. From here, up to 600 journalists can broadcast to the world at one time. Then comes the West Grandstand, and a runoff lane for cars which fail to make the tight turn located directly underneath the stand.
And then?
From the south grandstand, you look out over the harbour and the yacht club. There is also a driving school, a karting centre, and a business park on this part of the site.
So this was all specifically built for the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix?
Yes, and it worked very well. The whole world watched as the first day-night race in history took place here.
What do you mean by day-night? What type of race is that?
Simply that. The race started in the day and finished under floodlights as night descended.
Oh, of course, other Grand Prix races take place in daylight, don't they?
Except for Singapore, which is run entirely at night because of high temperatures and prime-time TV viewing across the world time zones.
So, is Abu Dhabi the only Grand Prix circuit in the Middle East?
No. The Bahrain International Circuit staged its sixth Grand Prix in April 2009 and is well known worldwide.
And now Abu Dhabi is too?
Yes. Throughout the race, it was our location, Abu Dhabi, which stole the show. Now the whole world knows where we are and how good it is to be here.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Hello, and welcome to Sports Weekly from Abu Dhabi. Today, we're going to look at Formula One motor racing and its profile here in the Middle East. Driver Jai Prasad is here to talk to us. Jai, when did motor racing in Abu Dhabi start?
The first ever Grand Prix in Abu Dhabi took place on Sunday, the 1st of November 2009.
Formula One fans and even the drivers themselves had been waiting for this race for a long time, hadn't they?
Yes. The Abu Dhabi Grand Prix was timetabled as the last race of the season, and thousands of fans flocked here to the track to watch the race live. At the same time, millions and millions of people watched us on TV and the internet all round the world.
What wonderful publicity for your country.
Suddenly, everyone knew about the United Arab Emirates and Abu Dhabi itself. It certainly raised our profile.
Does your track go through the streets like in Monte Carlo in Singapore?
No, the track is purpose-built. The whole track is 5.55 kilometres long. 50,000 spectators can be seated in grandstands along its course. All seats are covered against the weather. That's unique for Grand Prix spectator seating.
Can you talk us through a quick tour of the track, please?
Certainly. The main entrance brings visitors directly into the heart of the circuit at the main grandstand, which can seat 7,000. Opposite is the pit building, an area at the side of the track where racing cars are serviced and refuelled. There are 40 garages here for the racing teams and their officials. The team buildings and the medical centre are close by too.
What about television coverage?
The media centre is the next building along the track. From here, up to 600 journalists can broadcast to the world at one time. Then comes the West Grandstand, and a runoff lane for cars which fail to make the tight turn located directly underneath the stand.
And then?
From the south grandstand, you look out over the harbour and the yacht club. There is also a driving school, a karting centre, and a business park on this part of the site.
So this was all specifically built for the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix?
Yes, and it worked very well. The whole world watched as the first day-night race in history took place here.
What do you mean by day-night? What type of race is that?
Simply that. The race started in the day and finished under floodlights as night descended.
Oh, of course, other Grand Prix races take place in daylight, don't they?
Except for Singapore, which is run entirely at night because of high temperatures and prime-time TV viewing across the world time zones.
So, is Abu Dhabi the only Grand Prix circuit in the Middle East?
No. The Bahrain International Circuit staged its sixth Grand Prix in April 2009 and is well known worldwide.
And now Abu Dhabi is too?
Yes. Throughout the race, it was our location, Abu Dhabi, which stole the show. Now the whole world knows where we are and how good it is to be here.
That is the end of question 8. In a moment, you will hear question 9. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 9. Listen to the following interview about the search for water on the moon and then answer the questions below. You will hear the interview twice.
For a long time, scientists have thought that the moon is simply made of dust. But now this theory has been challenged. Here is Kerry Tan to tell us more.
Yes, man has landed on the moon in the past and carried out experiments, but no signs of water or indeed life have been found. The theory has always been that the moon is bone dry, just dust.
But now?
Probes, which are tiny unmanned spacecraft that carry out scientific experiments, have found that large areas of the lunar surface may possibly be saturated with water.
Water? Are you sure?
Well, the ingredients which make water, rather than the liquid itself, have been found there.
Oh, so there aren't any lakes or seas as far as you know?
No, but three satellites, two from the World Space Agency and one from India, detected the presence of some of the elements of water while making maps of the moon.
So we will soon be able to go for pool parties and swimming holidays on the moon?
No, not quite. The water molecules which have been detected are fixed to other molecules. They aren't liquid water in the form we know it.
Oh. So how much water is there on the moon, do you think?
We estimate that about a litre could be made from each cubic metre of lunar soil.
There have been some suggestions of water on the moon for a while, haven't there?
Indeed. A probe recently found hydrogen at the south pole of the moon. Hydrogen usually signifies the presence of water.
And will astronauts or even future lunar communities be able to make these odd molecules into water easily enough?
Yes, no problem.
So, if there is a ready supply of water on the moon, how does that help us?
Well, it's obvious. Future lunar outposts or settlements will have ready water supplies. We won't have to take it with us.
Are you doing any further experiments about the water on the moon?
Yes. This time we have used another probe and made it crash into a crater. We thought the crater might contain water, but we haven't analysed the results yet.
Then we will await your news of exciting developments about water on the moon.
Now you will hear the interview again.
For a long time, scientists have thought that the moon is simply made of dust. But now this theory has been challenged. Here is Kerry Tan to tell us more.
Yes, man has landed on the moon in the past and carried out experiments, but no signs of water or indeed life have been found. The theory has always been that the moon is bone dry, just dust.
But now?
Probes, which are tiny unmanned spacecraft that carry out scientific experiments, have found that large areas of the lunar surface may possibly be saturated with water.
Water? Are you sure?
Well, the ingredients which make water, rather than the liquid itself, have been found there.
Oh, so there aren't any lakes or seas as far as you know?
No, but three satellites, two from the World Space Agency and one from India, detected the presence of some of the elements of water while making maps of the moon.
So we will soon be able to go for pool parties and swimming holidays on the moon?
No, not quite. The water molecules which have been detected are fixed to other molecules. They aren't liquid water in the form we know it.
Oh. So how much water is there on the moon, do you think?
We estimate that about a litre could be made from each cubic metre of lunar soil.
There have been some suggestions of water on the moon for a while, haven't there?
Indeed. A probe recently found hydrogen at the south pole of the moon. Hydrogen usually signifies the presence of water.
And will astronauts or even future lunar communities be able to make these odd molecules into water easily enough.
Yes, no problem.
So, if there is a ready supply of water on the moon, how does that help us?
Well, it's obvious. Future lunar outposts or settlements will have ready water supplies. We won't have to take it with us.
Are you doing any further experiments about the water on the moon?
Yes. This time we have used another probe and made it crash into a crater. We thought the crater might contain water, but we haven't analysed the results yet.
Then we will await your news of exciting developments about water on the moon.
That is the end of question 9. In a moment, you will hear question 10. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 10. Listen to the following talk about a car that can travel underwater and then answer the following questions. You will hear the talk twice.
Hello, I'm Frank Reinhardt. I'm an inventor and I'm here to tell you about my new invention, the aqua car. Why have I invented this? Well, 30 years ago, I watched James Bond drive a car underwater in a film. For 3 decades after seeing that film, I asked myself how I might invent a car which would work underwater. Actually, I found out afterwards that the scene in the film never took place. It was an animation. My imagination, however, had been fired by this idea. I finally unveiled my own aqua car at a recent motor show in Switzerland. My aqua car is the world's first submersible car. Some military vehicles are also able to travel underwater, but my car can perform better than them. It moves easily underwater, just like a fish swims, at a depth of up to 10 meters. Military underwater vehicles have to be heavy, so they can stay submerged. This means they can only move very slowly, both on dry land and underwater. My aqua car goes fast in both environments. The actual car body design was easy. I wanted it to be a sports car. It was difficult, though, to make the aqua car engine watertight and resistant enough to water pressure to give ease of movement when driven underwater. I used 3 motors. One to be used on land, and the other 2 additional motors specially designed to propel the car underwater. The car itself is easy to handle. The driver accelerates into the water and lets the aqua car float. When the driver breaks open the lower door seal to let the water in, the car submerges. Remember that it's an open-topped sports car. Passenger breathing air comes from a tank of compressed air, a bit like the ones that divers wear. The aqua car body design has had to be left open for safety reasons. Doors might get stuck when passengers are trying to release themselves in the case of an emergency, for example. An enclosed car design would also make it so heavy that the aqua car would only move at a snail's pace when on dry land. So here it is. I present to you my aqua car. You can see it in action on the internet.
Now you will hear the talk again.
Hello, I'm Frank Reinhardt. I'm an inventor, and I'm here to tell you about my new invention, the aqua car. Why have I invented this? Well, 30 years ago, I watched James Bond drive a car underwater in a film. For 3 decades after seeing that film, I asked myself how I might invent a car which would work underwater. Actually, I found out afterwards that the scene in the film never took place. It was an animation. My imagination, however, had been fired by this idea. I finally unveiled my own aqua car at a recent motor show in Switzerland. My aqua car is the world's first submersible car. Some military vehicles are also able to travel underwater, but my car can perform better than them. It moves easily underwater, just like a fish swims, at a depth of up to 10 metres. Military underwater vehicles have to be heavy, so they can stay submerged. This means they can only move very slowly, both on dry land and underwater. My aqua car goes fast in both environments. The actual car body design was easy. I wanted it to be a sports car. It was difficult, though, to make the aqua car engine watertight and resistant enough to water pressure to give ease of movement when driven underwater. I used 3 motors, one to be used on land and the other 2 additional motors specially designed to propel the car underwater. The car itself is easy to handle. The driver accelerates into the water and lets the aqua car float. When the driver breaks open the lower door seal to let the water in, the car submerges. Remember that it's an open-topped sports car. Passenger breathing air comes from a tank of compressed air, a bit like the ones that divers wear. The aqua car body design has had to be left open for safety reasons. Doors might get stuck when passengers are trying to release themselves in the case of an emergency, for example. An enclosed car design would also make it so heavy that the aqua car would only move at a snail's pace when on dry land. So here it is. I present to you my aqua car. You can see it in action on the internet.
That is the end of question 10 and of the test. In a moment, your teacher will collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, please collect all the papers. Thank you, everyone.